Aileen Hasdell. I worked for Y Group.
I wanted to be in the Wrens, yes. I had a great family connection with the Wrens. I had a cousin who was commander on HMS Formidable, and my great-grandfather was captain of the ship that brought Prince over to marry Queen Victoria. Great-great-grandfather, I think it was. And so we have a family connection with the Navy, always have had.
Well, I was a bomb operator at Eastcote on Sea Watch. The machines never stopped. They went for 24 hours. You had to work in shifts, eight-hour shifts, which meant sometimes you were working all night. Three watches, and the other watch was on leave. Sea Watch was actually on duty when they announced VE Day. So it stopped the following day. The chief officer gave us all a little pep talk. Well, I think she thought we were all going to lose our honour because of everybody feeling free and throwing away caution to the winds and celebrating and drinking. She was a woman. It's been terrible for her.
You wouldn't have been allowed in one of the huts if
no,
you didn't
I
work
wasn't,
in
because, and that was the maddening thing. I had a friend who worked in here. She was a Wren. And I used to wait for her here outside lunchtime. And I was not allowed in, come hell or high water. Especially high water.
We had the buzz bombs. First one I ever saw, I was in Hyde Park with a blind date.
Mm. Oh, God.
I didn't think he got away quite enough. Because I just leapt at him, this thing came over ahead. And it was buzzing, and then it kicked out. And it fell. And there was an enormous explosion. We didn't even know anything about it until then. I mean, that was in London.
I'm Geoffrey Pidgeon. During the war, I was in MI6. I joined MI6 at Wadden, late 1942, early 43. And I served in MI6 until it became, in Singapore, it was handed over to the Foreign Office and called Diplomatic Wireless Service. The whole unit broke up. It became really divided into Her Majesty's Government Communications Centre, and that was at Hanslope, and the rest of the chaps went down to GCHQ at Eastcote.
See, you don't think of it when you're 18 and a half and 19 years old.
Exactly.
It's just, yeah, okay, I was lucky to get into the Wrens. I never wanted to go into the ATS, and certainly not into the WAF. So, yeah, I was thrilled a bit. I mean, I was in a reserved occupation, so I didn't need to do this. And my mother was livid, of course. She lost 12 and 6 a week. As soon as you started work, you had to pay into the family.
From 43 to 45, I was based here. In one of the huts, and we worked in the areas where the Hollerith machines were. And my job with others was to keep these machines in operation so they could, you know, get the punch cards out, spread them around, and read what's going on. That was my war effort.
So were you military or civilian?
I was RAF.
I went to Mill Hill at the beginning of November 1944. That was the basic training then, and I spent just under a month there. And then I was sent to Bletchley. I mean, it was just P5, that's all we knew. And I was at one of the quarters that the Navy had requisitioned of all the big houses in this area, Stockgrove Park. That was about, I suppose, 25 minutes away from here. And we came in, and I'm sure it was that room with the dome. And there was an old gentleman sitting at an enormous desk, and we were sent in twos, and we were told, this is a very, very secret place. You must never breathe a word of what you do here or what you see. You must never leave these premises. Your family must not know. Your friends outside must not know. And we sat there.
I don't think I was at all fazed by it, really. In fact, I wasn't even surprised when I had the call to come here. I suppose it was strange, but it didn't seem to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Except the fact that I was not allowed to speak about it to anybody. Unfortunately, nobody asked me.
Did you find that difficult?
Or? Yes, a little bit, yes. Mm. Yes, because, I mean, I wanted to tell people what I was doing. We didn't get asked too many questions, fortunately. I suppose people expected people to be in uniform and they didn't ask them where they were stationed or what they were doing so much. I mean, they said, oh, well, you're in the RAF, so, you know, that's it.
I volunteered at 17 for the Wrens and was called up at 18, went to the Wrens training at Mill Hill, which is called Pembroke 3, and we learnt all the naval terms. Our corridor became the main deck and our bedrooms were cabins where you had your meal was the mess and the forecastle was where you relaxed and various things like that. So we learnt a lot of naval terms. They did ask me in an interview if I spoke German. I said very badly.
I had to get out of the Official Secrets Act in order to give a lecture about what I was doing at Bletchley.
Really?
Yes, well,
I
rang up some old boffin and said, I have signed the Official Secrets Act. I have been asked to give a lecture to the SAS about my time at Bletchley. And I thought, well, I must just tell somebody I'm going to do it because I haven't spoken about it for about 30 years. And so I rang up the boffin and said, that's perfectly all right. You're not likely to say anything that will be of any interest. So I thought, well, that's bloody rude. So I said, well, I would need that in writing.
Absolutely.
I think it must have been something that my parents organised because my mother was very involved with the women's section of the British Legion and my father was a doctor and he had a big country practice. And of course, Dilly came from Bucks, as did I. And my father also, he had a patient whose daughter worked here, Phyllida Cross, I think she's mentioned actually in...
Yes, she was in the cottage.
And her family were patients of my father's.
Oh, I see.
So whether that is the connection, I simply don't know.
The one that I was talking to mostly was an American, and he was intrigued because he could not understand how the bomb works. Well, okay, I worked it for a time. I've been here for all these years and everything, and I couldn't explain to anybody how it works. I know exactly what it's doing. I can teach it to do what it has to do, but I'm not actually sure what all the innards are doing as I speak now.
It's advanced engineering, isn't it?
It was way ahead of its time. I mean, I know it's been supplanted by more modern technology now, but it was very much ahead of its time when it was being used as it was.
Well, I was quite astonished because for all that length of time, I hadn't thought about Bletchley Park at all. Hadn't crossed my mind. It was just something that happened in the dim and distant past, almost to somebody else, you know.
I joined the Wrens with a friend, and incidentally, my very best friend who worked with me at Bletchley and so on died a month ago. Joyce Hall, and Joyce Rogers, as she was then. And we joined the Wrens together. We went up to Telehue, and it was when they'd changed the place because of the doodlebugs in London. And we were there for a fortnight, and I went in to see the senior Wrens, and this was to decide what I was going to do in the Wrens, you see. And she said, how would you feel about working in London? And I said, all right. She said, well, how would you feel about working in a room probably where there weren't any windows? And all this sort of thing, and would you be prepared to work at night? And all this. And then I got quite interested then. I thought, oh, yes.
Very mysterious.
Actually, very mysterious. She said, I can't tell you anymore because I don't know anymore, you see. So I said, okay, you know, yes, put me on. And I went back and told Joyce, and she said, oh, in that case, if you're going to do it.
1941, I came, and I can't remember how long I was actually here.
Right.
Before Wandon House opened up, and a lot of us were sent there. Well, we lived in the beautiful house and they built a hut in the ground.
Yeah.
And on every watch, we just went over to the hut, did the work, the same work as here, and back to sleep and eat in this beautiful house.
In 1943, I was 20 and I was called up and I had to go into the service. I was sent to Pontefract, the ATS, to do 6 weeks initial training, the end of the 6 weeks training where we'd learnt how to square bash and just about everything else. And then they showed us this film of all the jobs we could do. And I was already a girl guide, and when I saw a snap of somebody sitting taking a wireless message down, I knew that that was what I would try for.
I thought to myself, if they've taken me into the army, I'm not going to be a shorthand typist. I didn't fancy being a driver like Elizabeth.
Because it's a reunion, and I have been coming for a few years now and staying for the weekend at various hotels. So many of my friends that used to come with me, they're not here anymore. I've either died or too far away to come. So I've just come for the day, and as it's a family occasion, I thought the family would like to come and have a look around.
It was the 15th of August, 1945. I think it was in the afternoon. Valerie and Mary and I and two other girls were on the day shift, which was rather fortunate because Commander Williams, our superior officer, came into the room smiling and he said, "Well done, girls. The signal has been intercepted from Tokyo to Geneva and the Japanese are surrendering." And we just sat there in complete silence. And then Commander Williams shuffled about and then he said, "Well, you bloody well get on with your work now," which broke the ice. We all laughed. And then he did say, "A message has gone to the King and to the Prime Minister, and I'll come back when it's been confirmed because it cannot be announced until Geneva has sent on the message to London, for very obvious reasons, because they would have known we'd have been listening."
I'm delighted to be back in the house, Bletchley Park, which I've known for a very long time indeed, and the history of which I've studied before there's anybody from Bletchley here at all, the story of the Montefiore family. It's an eccentric house, and my memory of Bletchley as the years go by tends to concentrate myself on eccentrics who were here, and one of the biggest of them was Josh Cooper, who moved on to GCHQ.
So in reality, you were one of the world's first computer operators.
And last in my case, I haven't got a computer. Well, I suppose we were. We didn't know that at the time. It didn't mean anything to us. It was just this machine. It was called Colossus and we worked. All these other things have come out much, much later. In fact, I'm still learning heaps all the time. Yes.
It gives me great pleasure today to meet one of our visiting veterans who we only heard about 2 days ago. We reacted very quickly to this. It's Mrs. Margaret Reardon, who was Private Chapman in the ATS, Royal Signals, and she worked at the Y Service Training Centre at Douglas on the Isle of Man. Very pleased to present you with this Bletchley Park Veterans Badge, which you can add to the two you've got on at the moment. There you are.
Thank you very much. Lovely, that is beautiful.
Thank you. Do you want to put that on now?
Yes, that would be lovely. Yeah, add it to my badges. Yes, that looks smart.
Oh. Another one for your collection. Have you only recently become aware that there was an official commemorative badge to be had?
I never knew there was. I was very proud of my service in the Air Forces and the ATS. I had a very nice time. I met my husband there.
I was so pleased to be asked to open your new building. It's this really lovely place. A long time ago, I came to Bletchley Park and I was working there, and I'm told, I believe, some of the work that I did had to do with Enigma and Colossus. So we are tied with Bletchley Park and the school. It's really lovely. So I'm very proud that what happened at Bletchley Park meant so much to a community here and all over the world, really. And I hope all at White Spire will be encouraged by that history and will enjoy learning in this lovely building. And I believe you call it the Enigma Centre, is that
right? Enigma Centre.
Yes. So I declare this new school open.
It would be about 1943. I was posted up to Godmanchester, where we used to house people to be dropped over in France, which was quite good fun and quite interesting. Then I was posted back to London, to Broadway. So that would be about late 43, 44.
My mother knew Captain Bradshaw, and I think my mother must have been talking to him about me, because he said, "Bring her up. because I wasn't learning anything at school. I was in a temporary hut as a school in Bletchley, because we evacuated here. And he asked me one or two questions, what were my hobbies and did I enjoy reading, and I must have answered the right questions for him. I was interviewed in here in the house, in one of the corridors near the kitchen.
Well, I was studying German literature at University College London, and I was hoping to embark on a thesis on the German Romantics, and I was all booked in to go to Tübingen University, which is right in the centre of all, absolutely besotted with German Romanticism. But Munich came, and so they cancelled my Tübingen term, and so I went to Zurich University instead. And so I stayed there till actually the war, well, was looking very imminent. And by the time I got home, the Siegfried line was being manned. So I just got back in time to UCL and found they were evacuating to Aberystwyth. So I really thought, well, I don't know, I ought to do something better for the war effort than reading German poetry in Wales. Especially as I then found out that Dr. Goebbels had got his doctorate on German Romanticism, so I thought, well, there must be something wrong with the German Romantics.
Well, when we were faced with the bomb machine, I was quite terrified. There were all these drums going round and round. I didn't know where to begin. But luckily we had a month of training, 2 weeks approximately of just watching, and then 2 weeks of hands-on experience being watched. Then after that, we were on our own.
Well, I had an uncle who was a destroyer captain who said the girls in the family must go into the Wrens. So I never had any doubt about that, that I would go into the Wrens. But I nearly didn't, because my godmother was married to somebody in the Foreign Office, and she wrote to my mother to say, be nice if Pat went to work at a place called Bletchley Park in Buckinghamshire, because a lot of the Foreign Office girls are going there, and she would be with a crowd of jolly girls. And I decided I didn't want to be with a crowd of jolly girls. I wanted to be in some port or near the sea. And I sent my mother a telegram from London where I was saying, hate crowds, jolly girls. So that was the end of that idea.
My name is Peggy Dorrington.
I'm Alma Whiteman. Well, there's not a lot that I ever discuss with people about what we did. I don't know why, it's just one of those things. We were in Hut 7 and Block C, but somehow it's quite a difficult thing to talk about. You were told to keep it secret for so long, you don't sort of speak happily about it anymore. It's one of those things, it was sort of ingrained upon you, I suppose. Not very comfortable to talk about.
I was based at Stanmore, which was one of the outstations for Bletchley, and I was a bomb operator.
You mentioned before this that you came here once before. Would you like to tell us the story behind how you came to Bletchley Park?
I came to Bletchley once because I was sent up on remand because I'd been late three times for duty, and so I had to come and see the chief officer up here.
For a telling off?
For a telling off.
Oh dear.
And so she said to me, well, you must do better than this. And I said, yes, ma'am. And so it said, instead, your next time off after the 12 o'clock shift, you're going to stay at Stanmore and do housework for half the day, and then I hope you'll behave better in future.
And we haven't told you off today.
Not luckily.
Anybody remembers the old-fashioned haberdashery stores, and that they used to have this system where you had a little ball and you put it in and full of thing, and it went along wires. So it used to come from the main office in the front, which was manned by men, presumably. Right. To us, and with the lake just in front there, they took the frogs out of there, used to put it in with the messes, so that when we got it, we opened it up, a frog jumped out at us. Typical man, wasn't it?
Absolutely brilliant.
I was in the Air Force section, and we were doing the departure and the arrival in their various destinations, all these bombers and things from North Africa, intercepting them. And it was terribly exciting sometimes. I mean, the feeling in the office when you knew you were ahead of the timetable and they hadn't yet taken off, and you were able to get the message through to night fighters, and then they'd go up and shoot them down. And then, really, that was a wonderful feeling of triumph. I never thought there the poor men were being killed.
We knew there'd been German raids, and when I got into the office that morning after it, I heard that a bomb had fallen near the hut. And in my lunch hour, I went out to have a look at the crater. and it was about 5 feet. It wasn't very deep. It was a terribly small thing, and it was at the far end of Hut 4. There was a little hut there, but it's not there anymore, and the crater was up against it. It had made it lean backwards towards the main building, and someone came along later the day, and a couple of men sort of thing, pushed it back. So there was a basis for this story that Hut 4 had been bombed, and that the whole thing had been moved off its foundation. But that's all the basis of all of it. Hut 4 was utterly unaffected by it.
I look back that it was fun, and I look back at the fact that whatever other nonsense I'd made, I did once do something valuable for my country.
Your service was invaluable, and yes. Thank you so much for your service.
Well, you know, it was lucky that we came to such an unusual and really rather sparkly place, even though we weren't allowed to see much of it. It was fun being here. The vibes were very good.